Rob Fleming's life is measured in vinyl and heartbreak. As the owner of Championship Vinyl, a failing record shop in North London, he processes the world through top five lists and carefully curated playlists, especially when it comes to romantic disappointments. When his girlfriend Laura walks out on him, Rob doesn't just mourn. He methodically catalogs this latest heartbreak alongside his previous romantic disasters, wondering where it ranks in his Desert Island all-time top five most memorable split-ups. His obsession with ranking everything from breakups to B-sides reveals a man who spent his life collecting experiences rather than living them, curating soundtracks rather than dancing to them. But as the needle lifts from the record of his past relationships, Rob begins to wonder if he's been playing the wrong songs all along. Rob's romantic history unfolds as a progression of painful episodes. It begins with Allison Ashworth, a brief teenage relationship ending behind bike sheds, establishing a pattern of betrayal. Next was Penny Hardwick, whom he dumped for withholding physical intimacy, only to learn later his rejection damaged her future relationships. Then came Jackie Allen, whom Rob deliberately pursued while she dated his friend, losing interest once he won her. Charlie Nicholson represents Rob's greatest heartbreak, a sophisticated design student who left him for someone more successful, confirming his deepest insecurities. Finally, Sarah Kendrew embodies a cynical marriage of convenience with someone Rob thought unlikely to attract others, making her departure especially crushing. These aren't mere memories, but Rob's emotional framework. By cataloging relationships like records in his shop, he shields himself from vulnerability. Each failed connection becomes another track on his compilation of disappointment, preserved but never processed. The record shop isn't just Rob's workplace, it's his fortress against adulthood. Inside this dusty sanctuary, Rob and employees Dick and Barry engage in endless debates about obscure musical categories, using their encyclopedic knowledge as armor against real-world disappointments. They've substituted knowing about life for actually living it. The shop attracts distinct customers, vinyl addicts who panic buy after browsing, nostalgic seekers replacing worn-out favorites, and those hunting specific songs haunting their minds. One customer spent years searching for a reggae record he'd only heard in a dream, making Rob feel like a midwife to something transcendental rather than just a shop owner. This microcosm reveals how Rob has built his identity around cultural consumption rather than creation. When a businessman enters, Rob feels childish by comparison, his extensive knowledge of the Velvet Underground suddenly seeming inadequate. Despite understanding love songs better than professionals who probably never listened to Al Green, his love life remains a disaster, the shop's isolation mirroring his emotional stagnation. Laura Lydon functions as the mirror reflecting Rob's self-deceptions with uncanny precision. Their relationship began when she requested a Solomon Burke song while he was DJing, prompting him to craft her a meticulous compilation tape following all the unwritten rules about track sequencing, his version of a love letter. Initially a legal aid lawyer with spiky hair and a motorcycle jacket, Laura later took a high-paying city law firm job that Rob resented, viewing her new style and professional attitude as betrayals. Yet he depended on her stability, borrowing money when his shop struggled. Laura refuses to be a simple character in Rob's narrative. When he complains they've grown apart, she counters that she's merely changed jobs while he hasn't changed at all. She challenges his complaints about her transformation, arguing that professional requirements and increased confidence shouldn't threaten our relationship. Her intelligence consistently outmatches Rob's self-deception. When he can't explain why his hypothetical success would differ from her career advancement, she argues that long-term relationships must accommodate personal growth. Music isn't just Rob's hobby, it's his fundamental lens for interpreting reality. He constantly wonders whether melancholic music shaped his personality or if his inherent melancholy drew him to these songs, a chicken or egg dilemma central to his identity search. For Rob, musical taste serves as both moral compass and character indicator. He dismisses Paul and Miranda's mainstream Beatles and Eagles collection with religious fervor. When Laura challenges his tolerance of their horrific taste, Rob confronts an uncomfortable truth. Perhaps it's not what you like, but what you're like that's important, a revelation threatening his entire value system. The compilation tape episode perfectly illustrates this. Rob's carefully curated mixtape for Caroline, a journalism student, represents emotional infidelity to Laura. In Rob's world, compilation tapes are intimate artifacts where song selections carry deep meaning. Rob's career aspirations reveal a man trapped in musical amber. His dream jobs, NME journalist 1976-1979, Atlantic Records producer 1964-1971, show how he uses nostalgia as a shield against the present, with Laura noting these historically impossible choices expose his escapist fantasy. At 36, Rob has the emotional maturity of a teenager. He still organizes his life around adolescent musical taste rather than adult responsibilities. His record shop serves as both sanctuary and prison, letting him avoid maturity while maintaining an illusion of expertise. Visiting his parents, Rob spots the most pathetic man in the world, a buck-toothed man in his late 20s, also with his parents, who gives him a smile of recognition. This becomes one of Rob's all-time top five low points, realizing relationships primarily offer escape from permanent singlehood with parents. Rob's commitment issues stem from his fear of death. At Laura's father's funeral, he finally understands that fearing dependence on someone who will inevitably die has kept him from committing. It seems safer to hop from woman to woman than face that kind of loss. Laura confronts his stagnation, warning he's 36 with no children, missing life while waiting for it to change. She accuses him of getting lost in hypothetical options while actually closing them off. His sulky response to her restarting his old club revealing his deeper fear of commitment. Rob's emotional growth begins when he stops seeing relationships as competitions. His habit of ranking experiences has prevented genuine connection. Visiting Sarah, he witnesses her devastation after Tom left her. At 35, she believes her future holds nothing more than pizza with an ex-boyfriend she never much liked. Though they agree pairing off shouldn't matter so much, the reality of Sunday mornings and loneliness makes this hard to believe. Connection appears unexpectedly. Dick's relationship with Anna works despite her liking Simple Minds, a band on their Musicians Who Will Have to Be Shot list. When meeting Laura's sophisticated friends he'd previously dismissed, Rob is surprised to find himself completely accepted. The breakthrough comes during their club night. Everyone dances together, Dick with Anna, Marie with T-Bone, Laura with Liz. When Rob plays the Solomon Burke song that began his relationship with Laura, she grins and gives me thumbs-up signs. This moment of connection without analysis represents Rob's transformation. For the first time ever, I can sort of see how it's done.